Har du et enkeltpersonforetak eller en liten bedrift? Da du sikkert lei av å høre meg snakke om hvor enkelt det å sende faktura med Fiken. Så vi gir oss her, fordi vi liker enkelt. Fiken, superenkelt regnskap. Prøv gratis på fiken.no.
We are part of the planet. That's what deep nutrition refers to. We cannot be healthy in an unhealthy environment. And so we need to eat from the healthiest parts of the planet. That's what our ancestors did, and we need to do that too. And so how do you do that? Well, that's traditional food.
Hei dere, velkommen til oss. Vi Biohacking Girls, din podcast for optimal helse.
Vi to jenter bak rattet. Dette Monica.
Og dette Alette. Vi biohacking-kollegaer og legger sammen våre erfaringer og kunnskap for å inspirere deg til å ta fatt på biohacking for å optimalisere helsen din.
Vi følger med og setter forstørrelsesglass på trender og siste forskning og snakker med verdens toppeksperter innen trening, life coaching, helse og biohacking.
Du klar for å starte med konkrete hacks, lytte til din egen kropp og ta fatt på din helsemessige reise sammen med oss?
Vi ønsker naturlig tilnærming til helsen vår, og vi snakker til både menn og kvinner.
Du kan gjerne gi tilbakemeldinger til oss under podcasten her, og slå gjerne til med en god stjerne.
Du finner oss også på Instagram og Facebook. Du klar? Velkommen!
Dette har vi gledet oss lenge til, Monica. Endelig det vår tur til å ha Dr. Kate Shanahan på podcasten. Hun har vært på vår ønskeliste i mange år.
Og så det jo sånn at vi her hjemme i Norge nå modne og klare, og kanskje til og med blitt litt overmodne på å lære mer og mer om frøoljer, vegetabilske oljer. Man har snakket mye om ultraprosessert mat. Det nytter ikke å snakke om et tema som brenner så hardt for oss, om vi ikke har noen som lytter og har lyst til å hjelpe oss og bidra til å opplyse om dette. Og da trenger vi internasjonale stemmer. Vi har jo hatt fantastiske ernæringspsykiater Simen Løseth på podcasten vår allerede, og han skal komme tilbake, men nå det Kate Shanahan som stemmen vår, og vi bare så utrolig stolte, for vi har jo vært så fan siden første boken kom ut.
Det har vi, og vi har lest henne og studert henne, og hun har virkelig gjort en kjempejobb med å spre ordet og forklare, og liksom, hun snakker så nydelig om hva dette gjør med oss, enkelt forklart, selv om hun ganske teknisk, så håper jeg dere virkelig får mye ut av denne episoden.
Den første boken heter Deep Nutrition, og der tar hun for seg alt det vi lurer på når vi matforvirret. Det var en kjempeseller, bestseller, og den boken passer så godt hvis du føler at du ikke vet hva du skal spise, og du prøver å navigere på alle råd som finnes på markedet der, og så klarer du ikke helt å finne hvor du skal hen. Da Deep Nutrition pensum for deg.
Ja, og så har hun også skrevet boken The Fat Burn Fix, hvor hun går litt sånn dypere ned i hvordan vi faktisk skal tenke rundt å spise riktig, hvordan vi skal gå ned i vekt, og hun har 5 veldig fine regler. Kan ikke du nevne de, Monica?
Jo, den første å spise naturlig fettkilde, og det betyr jo da selvfølgelig å unngå vegetabilske oljer.
Spise mat som sakte metabolisert.
Ja, de gode karbohydratene. Den neste da, den tredje å spise ekte salt.
Ja, og så det å drikke vann.
Og den siste og femte av hennes regler i Fat Burn Fix, den handler om sunne kosttilskuddsvaner. At man skal velge med omhu når man skal ta tilskudd i maten, og helst få de fra maten selv.
Ja, så Dr. Kate Shanahan har en bachelor i biologi fra Rutgers University. Hun har studert biokemi og genetikk ved Cornell University, før hun begynte på medisinstudiet på Robert Wood Johnson Medical School. Hun har praktisert over 10 år på Hawaii, og der var det også hun fikk øynene opp for dette å jobbe med kosthold, og der så hun så mye syke folk. Hun en ledende autoritet i ernæring og menneskerettighet, menneskelig metabolisme med over 20 års klinisk erfaring. Hun forfatter, hun nysgjerrig på det underliggende problemet som leder til inflammasjon og autoimmune sykdommer, nemlig oksidering og frie radikaler.
Ja, dere får bare glede dere, finne fram notatblokken. Vi hopper inn I episoden og ønsker Dr. Kate Shannon velkommen til podcasten, og velkommen til alle dere lyttere. Dr. Kate Shannon, welcome to our podcast. We are so thrilled to have you. We love your books and thoughts. And finally, we get to talk to you in person. How are you?
Hi, Alyssa and Monica. I am good. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
It's so nice to see you. What does your morning routine look like?
So my morning routine is very probably boring. So like I get up first thing and usually my cat wakes me up. So I make sure to feed her. And then I feed myself. And at some point, I take care of any kind of disasters that have happened overnight. And then I do a little exercise routine that I do every single morning just because I love routine. That way, you don't have to think about what you're doing. You just automatically do it. And then I have to study for my medical board. So I have to do a little bit of that every morning or take some quizzes to get credit every morning. And then I go through my emails and start preparing for whatever I'm going to be doing that day. So that's the start of every morning. Very repetitive.
But that's what a morning routine should look like. It should be really repetitive. That's the name of the game. But we want to talk about your books. But first of all, are you working on anything right now?
Well, I am actually. I am working on my next book, which is going to be out in June. And that one is going to focus on all of the effects of seed oils, how it's just changed society and how important it is for doctors to start learning about these facts about the seed oils and how empowering important it is for people, of course, too. So that's my next project.
Okay. So then we have to look a little bit back. We, Alette and me, we have been reading your books over and over again, Deep Nutrition and Fat Burn Fix. And we, in this episode, we need to talk to you about what happened during the last 2 decades that you've been working, spreading the words. What made you want to write Deep Nutrition, first of all?
Well, I had gone to medical school hoping to learn about the root cause of what made people sick, but I didn't, and I was very disappointed. So I'm a family medicine doctor, and that means I see people of every single age, men, women, and I also do a lot of disease management, like high blood pressure, diabetes, people wanting to lose weight, but you know, not really succeeding, coming to the doctor looking for additional tests. And like, I never had learned any of those good answers. So I always wanted to. In fact, I even went to genetics, to study genetics and biochemistry at Cornell, because I wanted to understand how the body worked. But none of that information was part of my education. So it wasn't until I got sick myself and then had to figure out how to get better myself that I learned that there was an entire other world of nutritional knowledge that just wasn't part of my medical education, but really should be. It really should be, but it was shut off from the world after World War II. There was this entire body of knowledge that just as if it never happened, because World War II kind of obliterated the work that had been being done in this field in the early part of the 20th century. So I started with that, and that was largely coming from a man named Weston Price, who was a dentist. And I saw his body of research, and at the same time, I had learned that vegetable oils are everywhere in our food supply, and that they're just not normal. They don't behave normally in our body. It's not what we should be eating. Their chemistry is different. So at the same time, I was learning these two things. And that's really what it basically blew my mind. And ultimately, it wasn't very long, but I came to realize that, yeah, the underlying cause of hypertension, diabetes, all the problems people were having, even birth defects, even me and myself needing glasses and having to have my wisdom teeth pulled, that was related to diet, because diet can change your genes and it will change the way you grow and it will change your life expectancy and it will change what diseases you develop. It was all coming back to diet. So finally, I understood that root cause. And I was just so excited to know that, that I started writing books about it and I started doing public speaking, and you know, people really were interested. So I was got a little bit of positive feedback and I just kept going from there.
Wonderful. I think we have listened to all the podcasts that you have attended and we have read all your books and the articles you have on your webpage. But I just wonder, would you mind share your personal story, how you got sick and what healed you in the end?
Yeah, so I had a very serious virus in my body, but it really nobody told me that. I had to figure that out. I was a medical mystery, really. That's what I really was. My knee was swelling and hot and I would get fevers and I would just feel sick and no one could explain what was wrong. I had surgery and I just kept getting worse. And then it wasn't until I actually learned about nutrition and diet and I got rid of the seed oils. I got rid of the sugar and empty calorie carbohydrates and started eating what can best be described as an ancestral diet, like just a more traditional diet, a much more nutritious diet. And that ultimately got me back to where it took 2 years, but I was ultimately able to first walk and then bike and then swim and run and do all the hiking and things that I enjoyed. But the virus is still in my body. It's a very serious virus and it's still, you know, living in my nervous system and my joints, and it's still trying to kill me. And I've been told that I should be dead, actually. But I believe it's just, you know, the fact that I'm actually eating healthy enough, it's kind of keeping me alive. Thank goodness.
Oh my God. That's an amazing story, and also gives some kind of motivation to other people who are struggling with weight or with other kind of diseases. Because so you can not blame it on the seed oils only, but this is a big part of your healing journey. Why don't we start with talking about the seed oils, why they are so bad for our health?
So the seed oils, like, so first I'll just say what they are. So there's about 8 of them that I think we need to avoid. And the most common are soy and corn and canola. But I remember them as 3 C's, 3 S's, and then 2 others. So the 3 C's are corn, canola, cottonseed, soy, sunflower, safflower. And then the other 2 are rice bran and grapeseed oil. And what they all have in common is that their chemistry is, they look like oil. I mean, you know, you really couldn't tell with the naked eye that it's not olive oil when you look at all of these oils. They look the same. But their chemistry is very, very different. And you can tell with the naked eye about this different chemistry if you do a very simple test. If you take olive oil and put it in the fridge, it will turn solid in about a day or two. If you take corn oil and put it in the fridge, it will not turn solid, maybe ever, or maybe it would take months. That's because the chemistry is different. It has a different melting point. The oils are less stable, and that has devastating effect on our health when we eat them in the large amounts that we are. So I guess the first thing to do when we talk about seed oils, talk about how much we're actually eating. You know, whether you know it or not, in America anyway, 80% of your fat calories are coming from the seed oils. And we started first producing massive amounts of soy, and then we started producing more corn oil and then canola oil. Now, I know in other countries, they produce sunflower oil, and that's actually a tiny bit better than soy, or it can be, but it's still not good. In other countries like Africa, they consume a lot of corn oil, more so than soy oil, but they started it later on. So America was kind of the first to start eating all of these oils. And since the 1940s, like right now, today, the fat calorie percent is about 80%. In the 1940s, it was more like, you know, between 10 and 30%. So we've really increased since the 1940s and 50s in this country. In other countries, it was decades later. So we are decades ahead of everybody else in terms of our diseases. That's why we've been one of the fastest developed countries for many decades now. And we are also, unfortunately, going to be leading the way in a lot of other terrifically tragic problems, including poor outcomes with pregnancy. We have one of the worst rates in terms of needing cesarean sections and, complications of childbirth of all the developed countries. And it's not because our healthcare is bad or too expensive for some people. Most people who are pregnant actually get free healthcare, more than half get free healthcare, and the other half are on insurance. So very few people are not getting healthcare who are pregnant. That's not the problem. The problem is that these oils have changed our body composition, our metabolism, and have even changed our genetics. And so they do this because of their chemistry. Now, to explain the chemistry, that gets a little detailed, and I can tell you that even doctors get confused about it. Even doctors who've read my books get confused about it, because there's a lot there. There's a lot to unpack. That's, if you want to compare it to something else, it's like smoking a little bit, except I think it's worse than smoking because we don't actually eat cigarettes. But, smoking has many, many effects. And to understand them all, to put them all in one book, it would be a very big book, right? Cigarette smoking also was not understood to be bad for many decades. Right? So there's a lot of parallels between doctors not recognizing that there was toxicity to cigarettes, and doctors don't recognize that there's toxicity to seed oils. The difference is that there's actually, a lot of misinformation around nutrition. Whereas there wasn't misinformation really around smoking. There was advertising for smoking, but doctors were never taught that cigarette smoking is healthy. The unfortunate thing is that doctors are taught that vegetable oils are healthy. And so that creates a very big problem. And that means that, there's going to be a lot of pushback on this idea, because doctors have learned something that is the opposite of what I'm saying.
So have you gotten a lot of pushback from your colleagues and scientists about your message?
Yes, I have gotten zero pushback from people who have read the books, which is, very encouraging. What's discouraging is that there are a lot of authorities out there from places like Yale and Tufts that haven't read the books and are just trying to silence the message. They're just saying that, Dr. Kate is just an influencer, right? I'm not a medical, they don't mention, when they talk about me, they don't say that I'm a medical doctor or have experience in chemistry and biochemistry. They just say I'm an influencer. And so that's makes it less interesting for people to go and bother reading my books. And so they're silencing the message. And so that's why I have to keep going on podcasts and writing new books. And so that's why I'm writing another book. And this one is more directly, the next one is going to be hopefully to make it impossible for people to silence me. But, even before that one comes out, there's still, a lot to talk about with what these seed oils have already done to us. And, what happens to our bodies and our biochemistry because the seed oils and the other ingredients in the processed foods are harming our health in so many ways.
So if you have read The Ultra-Processed People by Tulikin, his journey is to make us disgust the ultra-processed food. The way he writes it, it's really therapeutical in a way. but Dr. Kate, could you please explain to us the different types of fats and to the listeners so we understand the difference between saturated, mono, and polyunsaturated fats, please?
Yeah, so it's important to understand that there is a difference. I think that's the main thing, and that they have different effects in our bodies, and that the polyunsaturates, they react with oxygen too easily. And that reaction creates problems in our bodies. It creates problems because when oxygen reacts with these polyunsaturated fatty acids, it turns them into toxic compounds. That also happens when we cook with them. So the hotter the heat and the longer that we cook, the more these polyunsaturated fatty acids turn into very serious toxic compounds. And that's well understood. Like, that's not debated. The people who are trying to tell us that these oils are healthy say, oh, well, it's not, you know, it's not happening to any degree that matters unless you're eating deep fried food. And then they say, oh, but, you know, everybody knows deep fried food is not healthy. So it's as if it's not important. But that's only half of the story. The other half of the story is that combining these seed oils with processed foods that do not have nutrition makes the same things happen in our body, right? So the same toxins that form in the frying pan that are very serious toxins that can that are known to cause cancer, they have long, scary names like aldehydes or formaldehyde and 4-hydroxynonenal, 4-hydroxyhexanol. These are serious toxins that, you know, are listed as carcinogens. They are listed as hazardous compounds. If you're working with them, you have to wear a special suit. So these toxic compounds that can form in our body when our diet is not healthy have devastating effects. That part of the conversation is more controversial because there's not a lot of people that have put it all together. Actually, a few people that I talk about in my book, Deep Nutrition, I talk about one biochemist who kind of put this all together, and nobody understood his message. It was very technical. So in Deep Nutrition, I try to translate it into what is it doing to us inside our cells. It's basically causing inflammation, right? If you've heard of inflammation, these toxins cause inflammation in any tissue in the body. They can cause inflammation in your bloodstream so you get blood clots and heart attacks. They can cause inflammation in your brain so that if you're a child, you have maldevelopment of your brain and you may develop autism. If you're a little bit older, an older child, teenager, you can have abnormal communication in your brain, abnormal energy processing, and you can develop a bipolar disorder, or you can develop other serious mental illnesses. And then when you're older, it can cause, this inflammation can cause in the brain can cause dementia, but it can affect every organ in the body. It's causing fatty liver in the liver. It can cause kidney problems and lead to high blood pressure and then ultimately kidney failure. So it has so many effects that it's made it hard to actually comprehend what it's doing. And I think that's a big problem, why it's been so difficult for doctors to accept this as reality. That's another reason why it's so difficult.
A wonderful explanation. But under the polyunsaturated fats, here comes also the omega-3 and omega-6 in. Could you explain why these, or at least the omega-3, why that one is better?
Yeah, so that's a common actually perception. And that's something I need to talk about actually, because omega-3 fatty acids and omega-6 fatty acids, they are both essential to health. Now the seed oils, they have a lot more omega-6 than omega-3. So some people have taken that to mean that, well, we need more omega-3 in our diet. We should be eating more omega-3. But that won't help, because when we have so much of the seed oils in our diet, the omega-3 that we eat cannot get used properly. It basically gets oxidized too. And so it becomes a problem as well. So having, you know, the idea that we should eat more foods that are high in omega-3, it doesn't fix the problem at all. And talking about the ratio, I think, has confused the conversation. So I like to talk about it to say that it's important to understand, yes, it's an imbalanced ratio. And yes, it's true that the seed oils do have more 6 than 3, but actually 3 is more unstable than 6. And so if it were the other way around and seed oils had more 3, even 6, we would actually be in much worse shape. It would be much worse.
Wow.
Yeah. We would have different problems, but they would be more common and they would be more severe because it's more unstable.
So so the omega-3 is more unstable, but that oxidizes too, no? The
omega-3. Yes, that's that exactly. So the instability comes from the fact that it oxidizes. So those two concepts are really truly the same thing. It's the same chemical concept, right? The instability is because they oxidize. So what does that mean? It means they react with oxygen, right? It, and it's kind of like a burning, right? So if you had, you know, paper on the stove, right, that would burn. But if you had metal on the stove, that wouldn't burn. So if you want to talk about the fatty acids like that, the unsaturated fatty acids are more like the paper. It will burn easily. And the saturated fatty acids are more like the metal. It doesn't oxidize almost at all. It's very difficult to get that to oxidize in the frying pan.
Meaning they are stable.
They are very stable.
Yes.
And that's what makes them more safe to have in a higher amount in our diet, as we always have. We always have had more until recently. So that's the other important thing to understand, is that these oils, when we talk about that they are unstable, we have to talk about how much we are eating. And the fact that we are eating about, in America anyhow, we are eating between 300 and 600 calories every single day, which is a couple of ounces of these things, of these oils. And of the unsaturated fatty acids, right? Just getting the unsaturated fatty acid part of it, right? So the oils, fats and oils have several different kinds of fatty acids. And this is where the conversation can lose people. So, but hang in there. I'm going to get back to really practical. So when we talk about how much seed oil we're eating, that doesn't tell us exactly how much unsaturated fatty acid we're eating. Now we need to shift the conversation a tiny bit to talk about how much unsaturated fatty acid are we actually eating now compared to before. And I think that's what's important about it. It's not it's the comparison, because our body was designed to handle a certain amount of these very unstable oils. And if we exceed that amount, we're like going out of the safety zone into the red. And that's why our health is going off the charts bad. So the amount that we used to have of the polyunsaturates before these oils even existed was somewhere between 1% and 5% of the total daily calories, depending on where people lived, right? In different climates, they have different, you know, diets. So very small, 1% to 5% of total calories. And what are we at now? Well, somewhere between 10% and maybe 20 or 25% of total calories. So that's a huge difference. And that difference, when we're talking about unstable compounds that our body is built out of, that changes everything about our health. And it's such a kind of bizarre concept to think that we are building our bodies, constructing them out of the wrong material, that I can only kind of like compare it to. We have to use analogies. We have to imagine. So let's do like a little imaginary trip here. Let's pretend you're trying to build a house, right? You need, and you want to build a brick house, and you need some wood and some bricks and some glass for windows. Now, let's say that the order was completely mixed up. And instead of getting maybe 5% glass, you got 20% glass. Now you have to build your house with so many windows, you don't have enough space for bricks. And you don't have enough space for the wood. And the house eventually is going to break down. If there's like a little, you know, it's not going to last as many years because there's not enough support for the roof, say, right? You have heavy snow and the roof starts to collapse. The house cannot withstand stress. We are building our bodies, constructing them out of materials that when we experience stresses, and that can be emotional stress or physical stress, like infections, we start to break down. And the word for that breaking down is inflammation. So this is why we have all these inflammatory diseases. We have inflammation in the lungs. That's asthma. We have inflammation in the brain that causes mental disorders, that causes learning disorders in children, and it causes dementia in older people. That's from inflammation in the brain. And we have inflammation in other parts of the nervous system that can cause movement disorders, even like Parkinson's disease and multiple sclerosis, serious diseases that change people's lives. Inflammation in the blood vessels causes blood clots, and that's how we get heart attacks, and we can get strokes, and we can get blood clots in our legs. So an inflammation in the wall of the artery can make plaques start to build up, and you can have aneurysms. And aneurysms can bleed and cause sudden death. So we are having so many little pieces of inflammation, like little fires happening all over our body, that we just get these diseases because our body, our house of our body, was not constructed out of the right kind of material that can handle oxygen being in our body. It reacts with oxygen and causes inflammation.
So how would the consumers know what is too much? And because, I mean, the body would probably handle, I think you mentioned in the fat burn fix, around 3 to 5 milligrams, I mean, per day. But it actually, we consume up to 50 grams per day. How would we know?
Yes. So how do you know? Well, you can't, you just absolutely have to avoid the oils, right? That's really the most important thing, because that is going to be the biggest source. We could talk about other things like, you know, where is your butter grass-fed? Is your steaks, is that grass-fed? Those are other little details. But the biggest thing is avoiding those oils. That's hard enough. And that is the very, very most important thing. Because truthfully, it's not easy to figure out exactly how much you're eating unless you're weighing and measuring everything and using apps. And you know, who wants to do all that? I don't. But the government doesn't make it easy. It's not something that's in our country anyway. Polyunsaturated fatty acids don't have to be listed on the label. So even though the health authorities say we should get 10% and maybe we shouldn't get more than 10% of our calories from these things, they don't help us figure that out. And the governments know that we are getting more than 10%, and they're not making these warnings. They're not telling people, hey, we say 10%, and you're actually probably getting more than that, and let's help you cut that down. They're not doing that. So it's very difficult for the consumer to know. And really, you just have to become a little detective for reading those ingredients. That's really the best thing. And then the other thing you're going to discover is that mostly everything that's, you know, processed food has some of this stuff in them. All the junk food does, all the chips, all the crackers, all the many of the microwavable meals, a lot of these convenience foods, all the things that are processed foods that everybody kind of already knows is like not healthy anyway, have these oils. So these oils are another thing that we should be disgusted about, right? Because I like the psychology of what Dr. Tolikin is doing with ultra-processed people and trying to make us be disgusted about processed foods. Well, it should be these oils too, right? These oils are the most disgusting thing about processed foods, I think. They are the reason that, you know, they put the junk in junk food. They are the worst ingredient. Sugar and refined flours, those aren't as bad. They're not good, but they're nowhere near as bad because our body actually can convert sugar into healthy, normal body fat. But we cannot convert the vegetable oils into that healthy, normal body fat.
But are all the 8 hateful oils equally bad, Kate?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, I would have to say that I chose them because they're all just about equally bad. And to answer the question is going to depend more on exactly how it was processed and how you're using it and, you know, how long it sat on the shelf. So factors that we can't control have more to do with the differences between them. And it's almost not really worth talking about. Some people say that it's only worth talking about in terms of what people's perceptions or maybe misperceptions are about things like sunflower and canola. And maybe rice bran. I don't know. Is there an oil in your country that has gotten special attention as if it's like better than the rest?
Yes, the canola.
Yeah, the we call it rapeseed oil here. And it's supposed to be really healthy. Everyone is talking about that. And especially the cold-pressed one is really healthy. Thoughts?
Yeah, beneficial in control studies have shown that there is good qualities with this oil. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, so that's got to do with the fact that there are no chemists that make these clinical trials. And I do not think that canola oil is special. And I will tell you that in America, canola oil gets special status too. So that comes from this ratio idea and the misunderstanding that omega-3 is healthier than omega-6. And the fact that it is not healthier, and in fact, it is less unstable, is not properly understood by the dietitians or the doctors who are making these clinical trials. And so the clinical trials are not done properly. They're too short and they are not controlling for people's baseline diets properly. So the trials are flawed and they are not looking even at true outcomes. They're looking at surrogate markers for inflammation that are not relevant. So there's a lot of science I would have to go into to kind of explain all that. That is probably not right for a podcast. But the bottom line is that canola oil is even worse to cook with. So even if you get it cold pressed, definitely don't cook with it. And it's really not necessary. It's not, you can get omega-3 from food. You can get omega-3 from whole food, and that will be far better than cold pressed canola oil, right? You can get it from walnuts. You can get it from fish. You can get sushi, especially because you don't cook it. Right?
Yeah.
Any kind of food that has a lot of omega-3 shouldn't be cooked too much in order to preserve the omega-3, because omega-3 is more unstable than omega-6, like we were talking about earlier. So that's why it's so important for chemists to be part of the conversation. But right now it's only dietitians and doctors. And I have the background. I don't think we mentioned this, but before I went to medical school, I actually was a biochemist. So that's why I understand this stuff and why I like to try and translate to what it means to our health, because doctors don't understand it. They don't get taught this information. And so they completely don't understand the most important aspect of this, which is the chemistry.
Okay, so I just need to double check here. So the control studies that have shown beneficial outcomes like better insulin sensitivity and reduced LDL and reduced cholesterol, we cannot rely on these human randomized control trials at all, or?
Well, so yes and no. So there's different sorts of flaws now. And so some of them are giving us real results that we are flawed in our interpretation. So that's probably the most important to talk about. And we jump right into the cholesterol. In deep nutrition, I talk about the idea that cholesterol is not the cause of heart attacks. And lowering our cholesterol does not prevent heart attacks. And this has been shown in many, many studies that get ignored and dismissed by people with conflicts of interest, right? So the idea that acetyl oil can lower your cholesterol is true. It actually can, but that is not good, because lowering our cholesterol with seed oils makes us less healthy. And so that's a whole other discussion, but it's, you know, cholesterol is a nutrient and doctors forget that. We learn that cholesterol is a building block for testosterone and sex hormones and steroids and estrogen and progesterone and hormones we need to be, you know, fertile and to be healthy in our youth, right? And we still want to hang on to the little bits of them as we get older, like my age. We want every little bit of estrogen and progesterone. And if our cholesterol levels are low, our bodies just can't make the same amounts. It's just a basic matter of physiology that doctors learn, but we forget because we constantly hear this message that is a lie, that cholesterol is the cause of heart attacks. And so, you know, that's one of these traps is that it's changing our science, right? If we knew that cholesterol was good, and if we knew that it was a lie that cholesterol causes heart attacks, then when we see those studies that show canola oil lowers your cholesterol, we would know that's actually a warning to stay away from canola. But we don't. We think, oh no, that's confusing. Now I'm confused, right? And so we just, the confusion is dangerous too, because it makes people just go back to what they hear the most often, which is the status quo, which is the message that's making everyone sick, right? Eat more of these oils, especially canola oil, and avoid butter.
Exactly. But a little bit back to the omega-3, what about fish oil, the omega-3 fish oil? So if you take that to make your ratio between the 6 and 3 better, it's just going to mask a big problem?
Well, yes and no. So yes. First of all, we have to talk about the chemistry of fish oil. You know, our bodies are made of chemicals, and it really helps to understand the fundamental chemistry. So the chemistry of fish oil is that fish oil is very, very unstable. It is so unstable that after about 30 days, you know, in a capsule, it can deteriorate and have toxins in it. So that when you buy your fish oil, it's already gone. The omega-3 that you wanted is not there. And instead, there's toxins in it now. So we have to be very careful if we want to supplement. We can talk about first, do we even want to supplement? Maybe some people do. Most people maybe don't. But if we want to supplement, we have to be very careful about the kind of fish oil we get. And on my website, and maybe we should link to this in the, if you have show notes, I have an article that says how to tell whether your fish oil is worth buying or if it's just going to be a bunch of toxic stuff. It has to do with how it gets processed. So I don't recommend fish oil without a lot of discussion and warning first.
Okay.
Okay, that's nice to know. We will make sure that we put this in the podcast notes so we can read your studies on that too. But could we go further on a little bit and talk about the mitochondria? What is their purpose and how are they efficiently connected to, for instance, weight loss?
Right. Okay, so this is a subject that I go into in great detail in my book, The Fat Burn Fix. And so what that was all about when I was doing the research for this book, I learned that the unsaturated fatty acids actually destroy these little things in our cell called mitochondria. Now, why does that matter? Well, mitochondria produce energy for our cell. They're like the little power packs of our cell. Every cell, almost every cell in our body has mitochondria, and that's where it gets its energy from. There's a few cells that don't, like red blood cells. But for our cells to survive, they need healthy mitochondria to be producing their energy. And the kind of energy, if you're into sports, you've probably heard about this thing called ATP. So that's the kind of energy that mitochondria produce. And they have to, just like generators that we use to create electricity that fuels our power grid, these generators need to run on a kind of fuel. They have to burn something. They don't burn gasoline. They don't burn oil. They burn fat, or they burn sugar, or they burn protein. They can also burn alcohol, right? But they have to have a fuel. And all of these different fuels are made of different chemicals. And some of these chemicals our mitochondria do just fine with. But there are some of these chemicals that our mitochondria cannot handle and are absolutely going to be destroyed eventually if they have to burn them. And guess what those are?
Yes.
Those are the fatty acids we've been talking about that are in seed oils, the polyunsaturated fatty acids. And this is why knowing the percentage that's in your body fat now versus historically actually matters. Because now the percentage in our body fat is somewhere around between maybe a low side would be 10, and some people have 40%. And historically, it was between 1 and 5%, just like what was in our diet. And so now we are giving our mitochondria maybe 10 times, 20 times, perhaps 40 times as much of this fuel as ever before, and this fuel is bad for them. So never before have mitochondria been just forced to have to burn so much of these unsaturated fatty acids than now. Why does that matter? Well, they can't produce energy. They just can't. They can't produce energy. And it starts to destroy the mitochondria. And is this some kind of a theoretical idea that I have that, you know, these oils are destroying mitochondria? No. There's many, many studies that show in animal studies, because you cannot do these studies in people. You have to look at animal studies. And they show that when you feed these things to animals, their mitochondria start to malfunction and they start to develop the sign metabolic disease called insulin resistance. So these oils cause insulin resistance. What is that? So they cause insulin resistance by damaging our mitochondria. And they cause insulin resistance by damaging our mitochondria, and this causes diabetes. So insulin resistance is the beginning of diabetes. Insulin resistance is the metabolic problem that makes people overeat. It makes people feel hungry all the time. Insulin resistance does that. And so I know I'm throwing a lot of terms out. That's why I like to just say, yeah, if this is interesting, it'll make a lot of sense when you actually read it from a book from cover to cover about it, because you really need to. This is so many new concepts, and it's just a completely different way of talking about the problem than what we're talking about now. But what we're doing now isn't working. What we're doing now is we're treating insulin resistance and diabetes with more insulin and drugs, and it's not getting at the root cause of the problem, which is all these polyunsaturates in our body fat that we have to clean those out. And then we have to start losing our fear of cholesterol so that we can eat butter and we can eat foods that will raise our cholesterol so that we can be healthy again. It's all part of a big picture.
Yes, and the consequences also that comes with the fats and the dysfunctional mitochondria after a while causes weight gain, and it causes the hunger hormone to raise, and you go around snacking all the time. And actually, the society is built around it too.
Absolutely, yes. You know, like when I was growing up in the 70s, we did not have snack breaks at school, and we were fine. In fact, we had the opposite. We had go outside and play breaks. That was called recess. And, you know, the teachers got a break from the students, and we was wet outside, and we ran around. I mean, we would go outside in the rain. We would go outside in the snow. And it was like normal. But now children, unfortunately, are so fragile, they can't be doing the sorts of things that normal children were able to do before these oils were in the food supply. And schools now have to feed them every 2-3 hours, or they start to break down mentally. Their behavior starts to deteriorate because they're not getting the energy from their body fat. They need energy from food. They need sugar. And this is why it's a little bit dangerous to just say, oh yeah, the sugar's the problem. You know, all we need to do is get sugar out of our diets and everything else will be okay. No, we are craving sugar. We actually need sugar in an abnormal amount. And that's the problem. Now, to be clear, I'm not saying sugar is good for us. We need foods. When we're unhealthy, we may need some foods that have carbohydrates like beans and vegetables and stuff like this. I wouldn't get the sugar from sugary foods. But to be completely keto might not be good for people when they're insulin resistant, because they need more sugar in their bloodstream. And that's a little bit complicated, but you can imagine if we were talking about that the body fat now doesn't work, it damages mitochondria. Cells need a different fuel, right? And they have choices. I was saying earlier that cells can get energy from things like alcohol. They can get it from sugar. They can even get it from muscle protein and body fat and the fat in our foods. So they have another choice for what they can use other than the body fat between meals, right? If the body fat doesn't work, doesn't give them energy, well, we have blood sugar. So cells use sugar. And that is the problem that causes diabetes and causes obesity, the fact that our cells need this sugar, because it makes us hungry. It makes us hungry. It makes us eat. And so the very different thing about the Fat Burn Fix than every other book about keto or low carb is that I don't tell people to go cut their carbs
so fast right away, I say you might have to gradually cut your carbs because your body actually needs some right now. But don't get it from sugar. Don't get it from cookies and bread. Get it from whole foods, like, you know, especially beans and some of the starchy vegetables, cooked carrots, nuts are a very good source. Nut butters have some carbohydrates, and fruits, of course, because fruits, when you eat them with meals, they don't spike your blood sugar that much. Don't eat fruit for a meal, but fruit has fiber, and especially berries will spike your blood sugar if you eat them with other foods. And those have the sugar that your body actually needs when your metabolism is damaged.
Yeah. So what kind of fruits would you recommend us to eat? In your book, you write about berries and melon. Yeah.
Yeah, the berries and the melons are the best because they get into our bloodstream slowly, and they don't spike our blood sugar very much, and they won't spike the insulin either. And now, it's not to say bananas are bad. It's just that a banana is a huge amount of sugar. It's got like 30 grams of sugar in one single banana. We tend to eat the entire banana, right? But berries come in little tiny berries, and you can just have like four or five in a salad, and it'll make your salad taste really good. You can put it in yogurt, and, you know, or maybe five is too small of an amount, but, you know, 10 or 20. And you really don't get very much sugar from it, but you just get a little bit. And because of all the other foods in your stomach at the same time, it won't spike your blood sugar. So you'll get just a little bit of that sugar dribbling into the cells, just a little bit, to give them just a little bit of the sugar that they really need for energy when your body fat is not healthy.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about the seed oils and the effects on the body, because we talked about weight, we talked about the fats in the organs, inflammation, oxidation. Could we talk a little bit about oxidation and free radicals?
Yeah, so actually oxidation is the chemical term, but it is the very most important term to understand if you want to really understand what's happening in our bodies these days from the seed oils. So oxidation just means it's burning, it's reacting with oxygen, and it's doing it in a way that is not under our control. So it's a chaotic reaction, and it causes chaos in our cells. And this is why we get inflammation. You know, inflammation is basically chemical chaos, and nothing in the cell can work right once it is it's kind of like having a little teeny fire inside your cell. So it disrupts the function of the cell. So what does that, you know, what does that mean? Well, it means that we are going to experience inflammatory diseases. And so when we have inflammation in our skin, we can develop severe acne, we can develop psoriasis, we can develop eczema. When we have inflammation in our liver, we can develop fatty liver, we can develop cirrhosis. When we have inflammation in the brain, we can develop, you know, mental diseases. We can develop degenerative diseases like dementia. So there's almost nothing. I mean, every problem that people are facing with their health is due to oxidation at the root. And it's not only seed oils that can cause this, right? Smoking can cause oxidation too. And even just not having enough nutrition in your body can cause oxidation. So I'm not saying it's all seed oils, but a lot of it is. And most of the problems that we have are ultimately coming from our diet, because the diet today is just so poor in general. The seed oils are a big part of it. That's like, you know, the fat part of it. But the other part of it is that much of the protein that we eat is poor quality, and much of the carbohydrates that we eat are poor quality too. Because, you know, when we live on processed foods, what is a processed food really? Well, it's something that we don't talk about very intelligently, I don't think. And this is what I wanted to talk about in Deep Nutrition. This is a topic of the other book that I wrote first, Deep Nutrition. Processed foods, we talk about them in a silly way. We should talk about them in their main ingredients. The main ingredients in processed foods are vegetable oils, refined flours and sugars, and processed proteins. When you look at dog food, we are literally eating so badly that we are eating basically food that we feed dogs, right? And we shouldn't be feeding our dogs dried dog food either, But if you look at the dog food ingredients, you're going to see the same ingredients in a lot of the processed foods that you might see on the grocery store shelves too. A lot of the frozen foods, they're going to have vegetable oils. They're going to have processed proteins like soy protein isolate or vegetable protein, right? Texturized vegetable protein. That's a main ingredient in a lot of instant dinners. It's a main ingredient in dog food and cat food. And so are the flours, right? Like maltodextrin and the refined flours that we put in, that we make pasta dishes out of, that we make frozen, you know, all the frozen dinners, ready to eat foods, you know, microwave foods. Those are made with these same three ingredients. And these three ingredients are the defining thing, features of a processed food: the processed vegetable oil, the processed carbohydrates, and the processed proteins and the powders. And those things in the diet have very little, give us very little nutrition, because almost all that they are the macronutrients. They are just the fat, the protein, or the carbohydrate. When we eat meat, we're getting all the amino acids that we need. We don't get this necessarily from the soy protein products and the vegetable processed vegetable proteins. We're getting minerals, we're getting vitamins, and we're getting things like choline and lecithin and other minor nutrients that make, you know, that make a cell live. Our cells need so many different chemicals to live. But when we feed them just these three categories of chemicals, the proteins, the processed proteins, the processed fats, the processed carbohydrates, they're not getting all of those other categories of chemicals that they need to live and be healthy. And that's what processed food is. It's just a few of the chemicals that we need. It kind of keeps us alive. But we are always hungry because we're not nourished, and for the reasons we were talking about our mitochondria, and we just can't physically be healthy. You know, this isn't even theoretical. I mean, there's just so many studies that show that people, the more people eat fast food and processed food, the more diseases they have at every age. And it's just that we're slowly, slowly making ourselves sick from these processed foods. But, you know, you have to get rid of all of them if you want to be healthy. And I just like try to help people understand it and be disgusted about the chemistry of it.
Yes. But Dr. Kate, it's not so slowly that we get sick. I think it's quite fast. It's not that many decades ago that we were much more healthier than we are today. So this is kind of fast.
Speeding up.
But back to the skin health and these vegetable oils, seed oils, because when we stopped, Monica and I, we stopped the seed oils when we got aware of this a couple of years ago. And our skin and the sun is just amazing. We are so much happier in the sun. The skin can take more sun without the vegetable oils. Is this true or is this just anecdotal?
Well, it's both. It's anecdotal and it's true. There's a reason for it. And the reason has to do with the fact that polyunsaturated oils should not be exposed to light. You know, you could read that on the bottle, keep in a cool, dark place. But when you eat those polyunsaturated oils, we store them in the fat. Where is our body fat? It's right under our skin. So, you know, the UV light that penetrates to the deeper layers of the skin, and it does when the sun is strong, it starts turning those oils into toxins right in our skin. And that's why our skin gets red. It's from inflammation. The toxins are causing the inflammation that makes our skin red and causes that pain as if we were burnt. But that doesn't happen when we don't have so much of the polyunsaturated fat in our diet or in our body fat. So instead of burning, instead of becoming inflamed, we can get tan, right? Some of us can't get tan as easily as others, but you know, at least you can turn on your natural sunscreen, which is getting tan.
We also got a question from some of the listeners. They ask about rapeseed oil used in facial creams. That would probably not be a good idea. What is your thought on that?
Yeah, so it's not as bad as eating it because it's not going to get into your body. Now, is it going to really nourish your skin very much? I don't know. So you could argue that it actually could help if you're very, very metabolically sick and you have such bad health that your body cannot even keep the fatty acids where they need to be, right? This is another part of the reason this is complicated. But, so there's some slim chance that some people might notice a benefit from putting it on the surface of their skin. But for most people, I would say it's not going to help. And they're not terrible, but they're not, you know, they're better to use a more natural fat, like something based in a tallow or an olive oil or even a coconut oil, those natural things that people used to use. You know, people in Africa used to put butter on their skin. They still do. The Maasai, they use butter for butter, and they mix it with, they make like their own makeup. They mix butter with red kind of clay called ochre, and they coat it all over their skin. And so if you ever look at pictures of Maasai, they have this beautiful uniform skin that's this beautiful, like red, brownish, slightly reddish brown color. And it's from that mixture sometimes. Like, it's hard to tell. Sometimes it's their natural skin color because they turn it to match their natural skin color. They can control the color. But that was a traditional sort of makeup that women came up with.
But how about seed oils in supplements? So many of them have that as an ingredient. Should we stay away from those as well?
Well, if you mean like black seed oil or something like that, where it's the purpose of it is to get these unsaturated fatty acids, definitely I would stay away. Yes. For the same reason that I recommended staying away from fish oil, it's not necessarily stable even. And you get more than enough already in your diet. It's hard to avoid them. We're already getting too much. So if your supplement has some, get a different supplement.
You know, hormonal therapy is really popular these days, especially bioidentical. And I just discovered, like in the progesterone that I use, there's seed oils in it. So I have found a new brand I can change to. Would you do the same?
Yes, if I had some that had seed oils in it, yes, absolutely. I would, if possible, for sure.
Another question about oils like sesame oil, hemp oil, and even walnut oil, black seed oils, would you use these like for frying or for salads?
Yeah, so that, I'm not 100% sure. I'm not knowledgeable enough about it. That's different than makeup. The difference is we want the progesterone to enter into our body. And so that the vehicle there, they call it a vehicle. There's the active ingredient and the vehicle, the thing that delivers it, or that it's mixed with to deliver it into your body. It may be that it was more effective to have like a polyunsaturated fat mixed in with progesterone or estrogen. I just don't know. Right. So there may be a pharmacology. That's more a better question for a pharmacologist, actually, than me. And the amount would be pretty minimal. So I would say if that's, you absolutely have to have that in there for it to work functionally as a drug, then it's going to be minimal and not worry about it.
Thank you very much. I just wonder about sesame oil, hemp oil, walnut oil. Many questions about these too. Could we use them or for salad dressing? Are they as bad as the other ones?
I use them myself, and I do it because of the way that they taste. They are very, you know, delicious. And they're not as, some of them are not as bad as others. So they're not all the same, right? So sesame oil is different than hemp. And then there was another one that you mentioned.
Walnut.
Oh, walnut. Right. Okay. Right. So let's start with sesame. Sesame seeds have been bred for many thousands of years, and they are okay even to cook with for very short periods of time because they have so many antioxidants. And it has to do with just the fact that they release their oil easily. Sesame oil is very expensive. It's not processed the same way that the rapeseed oil and the soy oil, you know, are processed. So it retains its antioxidants and it retains its vitamins and minerals. So it's a nutritious food. Now, I don't cook with it every day. It's just like for a flavor when I want the special flavor that you get from it. And that's how I would answer the same question with walnut oil too. Now, hemp seeds, I would say hemp hearts actually, you could use those as food. I wouldn't recommend hemp oil as a supplement because it's not culinarily very traditional. We didn't use this. It hasn't been bred, I don't think, long enough to really have been optimized the way that the sesame was. And walnut oil, you're better off eating walnuts, really. You just throw the walnuts on your salad if you want that flavor.
But since you mentioned antioxidants in the sesame oil, do you think if we stopped eating the seed oils, we would not need any supplement like antioxidants either?
Right. Well, I mean, we would need vitamin E. We would. You can't help it. If you stop eating seed oils and you start eating whole foods, you're going to get antioxidants, right? And so the antioxidants, we do need them, right? And we need them for when we're cooking because the antioxidants in olive oil protect the olive oil and they protect the food. So the antioxidants can protect our food. Like there's different types of antioxidants, I guess, is what I'm getting at here. So there's antioxidants that are vitamins. There's antioxidants that our bodies make. And then there's antioxidants that are in plants that a lot of people supplement with, but they really don't do any good as a supplement. Like a lot of the phytochemicals and things like this that people are talking about, like pycnogenol and resveratrol and birch bark oil. And a lot of these they don't do any good for our bodies. We don't need them. Our liver actually has to eliminate them because they're useless.
Wow.
Good to know.
That's really good to know because that industry is a whole other chapter.
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's sad that just they don't involve chemists in these discussions and when they're doing studies. And, you know, honestly, sometimes they don't want to really know the truth because they want their supplement to look like it's good.
Yeah. Okay, we need to ask you now, please, Kate, and share with us the fats you use just to not to confuse us all. What fats are really good to use?
My favorites are butter, olive oil. I like peanut oil. A lot of people think that there's issues with that one, but I would disagree. And we can go into why if you're curious.
Yes,
but,
yes. Why?
Oh, sure. Okay. So like sesame oil, it's been bred for a long time and it yields its oil easily and it doesn't need to be refined. Now, I don't recommend or use refined peanut oil, the cheap stuff. I use peanut oil that tastes like peanuts. And it's because it still has the antioxidants and it won't oxidize when you cook with it to the same degree as the vegetable seed oils do. So, and because it has delicious flavor. So yeah, I use that, you know, again, not like sesame oil. I mean, like sesame oil, I'm not going to use it every day, but a couple of times a week, I want something that has that kind of Asian flavor profile.
Very good. And how about coconut oil, avocado oil? Do you use that to marrow?
Yeah, so I use coconut oil sometimes also when I want that Asian flavor, right? I don't use coconut oil to make like Mediterranean food, right? There's a lot of cookbooks out there that they basically are making everything with coconut oil, even though it's not having the other Asian ingredients in there. It doesn't make sense to me. But I use it sometimes. I don't like the flavor in like olive. I'm not going to use it. I'm not going to use it to make like, pasta sauce with or soups that aren't Asian with. But you can certainly do that if you like it. Now, avocado oil is absolutely fine when it's unrefined. I wouldn't have it when it's refined. Most of it is refined, unfortunately, and it has a very strong flavor and it's not a traditional oil. So I would, you know, I don't love it. I don't use it myself. But if you like it, go for it. If you like it when it's unrefined in that strong flavor, then definitely you can use it. Even if it's refined, it's still better for you than the seed oils are.
Okay, Kate, this has been really nice. And to sum this all up, could we go through your 5 steps in the fat burn fix just to sum up everything that we have been talking about so we get really healthy?
Yeah, so the first step is avoid seed oils. Big surprise. And actually that one step, if that's the only thing you do, that'll get you 80% of the way back to health eventually. And the second thing is avoid the empty calorie, refined sugars and flours, right? Get healthy whole food carbohydrates and don't eat too much of things like, even fruit and potatoes, right? That's a whole food. And then let's see, I'm trying to remember now since I wrote this book 5-6 years ago, exactly what it's number three. I think number three might be drink water or seek salt.
Salt. I think it's salt.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Salt doesn't cause hypertension. That's a myth. I explain why in the book. And then the next thing is water, I believe. And that's mostly because, you know, a lot of people have weight problems, drink soda, and they just don't like water. And they're getting calories every time they get thirsty. And that's not what you should, you know, that's counterproductive. So drink water instead of soda. If you want something between meals, drink some flavored water, try to like water. And then the last one is smart supplementation. And that's where I talk about getting your vitamins and minerals. Those are important to supplement with because it's very hard to get them all in our current modern diet. And other kinds of supplements are very questionable in my mind, and I talk about that in the book.
So when you talk about smart supplementation, you talk about food, real food?
Well, actually, yes, there are some examples of like things like Brazil nuts. You know, if you want to get selenium in your diet, you just need to have like a Brazil nut every few days because they're so high in selenium. So there are real foods that are so good for us. You can actually use them as a supplement. But when I talk about smart supplementation, I just mean mostly getting supplements that are focusing on vitamins and minerals because they're not in our food supply.
This has been a wonderful talk, but we could talk forever. But in the end here, are you optimistic about the future?
No, I'm realistic about the future. I think that that it's going to take a lot before we can have a sunny, rosy outlook. We have a lot of work to do. And, you know, folks like you are getting the message out. And folks like your listeners hopefully become little, evangelicals with their friends and their families to help them. You know, if you had success, just don't keep it secret, you know, share it and share it with your family because it's going to take a unified effort. We are on a big cruise ship off of a huge waterfall that is going to destroy us all very soon if we don't get serious about our health. And I'm not sure that's a pessimistic outlook. I truly think it's realistic because I've been watching what's been going on. So, but it's not hopeless, right? I think we can be realistic, but not lose ourselves in hopelessness.
Yes. And the biggest issue right now we see is that people are very food confused about all the diets, where to go. So again, knowledge is such a powerful tool to get closer to yourself.
And Deep Nutrition, I wrote it for that reason, because it makes the case that we need to pay attention to what our ancestors did. And that is the answer. And that will end confusion once you understand that and take, you know, once you realize that we had it all figured out 100 years ago. And then when we started working processed foods into the food supply, well, people wanted to sell those, and so we had to lie. And that's what created the confusion.
Thank you, Dr. Kate Shanahan, for joining us on our podcast.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
Thank you, Monica and Alyssa, so much for inviting me on. It's been fun talking with you, very informed women.
Thank you. Jeg likte veldig godt å snakke med Dr. Kate Shanahan. Jeg synes tonen hennes og måten hun formidler kunnskap på gjør det litt mer forståelig, og igjen så sitter jeg igjen med nye tanker og nye ideer. Jeg synes jeg har lært så mye. Det ikke fordømmende, det inkluderende. Det små endringer man kan ta fatt på for å komme i gang hvis man har lyst til å endre og få det bedre med oss selv.
Jeg så liker nyansen hennes. Hun liksom, hun sier både ja og nei til spørsmålene våre, og forklarer også hvorfor hun mener både ja og nei. Når vi snakket om dette med supplementer, så hun veldig åpen på at dette ikke mitt felt, men jeg tror og jeg kan tenke, og
både ja og nei der også. Og så likte jeg også veldig godt at hun inkluderte litt flere oljer. Hæ? Det var jo veldig gøy.
Ja, for jeg må innrømme at jeg elsker jo sesamolje for eksempel å steke når jeg skal noen ganger lage litt, litt mer internasjonale retter. Men dere, kjære lyttere, som har fått en ny dose med det tema som vi brenner mest for, og har gjort det lenge, det altså så interessant å lære mer. Men hold ut, fordi at vi skal bringe inn en lege, en norsk lege, som dere kjenner, til å gå litt grann gjennom episoden, samtidig så han skal oppdatere det siste innen forskning som han selv ser på, nemlig
Simen Løseth. Vi skal ha han tilbake, og da skal vi fortsette å snakke om dette. Og da blir det kanskje litt mer forståelig for dere også, hvis dere synes mye av det hun snakket om var vanskelig.
Uansett så håper vi at dere har hatt en god opplevelse med Dr. Kate Shanahan, og sjekk ut de linkene vi legger under i podcast-notesene her, fordi at du finner masse spennende lesestoff på hjemmesiden hennes, og vi vil absolutt anbefale å lese bøkene hennes.
Hack it!
Track it! Vi minner om at dere må snakke med egen lege eller kostholdsveileder om dietter og andre spørsmål relatert til medisiner og supplementer. Informasjon med dele kan ikke bli brukt til å diagnostisere, behandle, forebygge eller kurere noen sykdommer eller tilstander.
Når du forestiller deg et innbrudd, så ser du for deg drama.
Okay, se om du finner noen passord.
Kaos. At noen tar på det som ditt. Invaderer det du har nærest.
Finn kort informasjon.
Det som bare du og kjæresten din vet om.
Masse private bilder. Nydelig.
Men sannheten at mens et digitalt innbrudd pågår, så merker du ingenting.
For sikkerhetens skyld inkluderer vi sikkerhetstjenester i våre abonnement. Bli tryggere på telenor.no/sikkerhet.